Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinati Guma, and joining me to wrap this week up are Dale Hutchison from Absa Asset Management and Caroline Kremen from AdviceWorks. Thank you to the both of you for joining us. Let me start with you, Caroline. So when I look at the earnings from the US, they largely beat market expectations, right? And I guess we can maybe debate if the expectations were low to begin with in another time. So we did have, you know, a few disappointments here and there, but largely the market did welcome those earnings. So in South Africa, we're now knee deep in earnings, and I'm interested in what your sense has been on the local bourses company earnings so far.
Look, I think it's been a mixed bag. I think what has been really nice is we've seen particularly some really good earnings coming through from the financial sector, from the banks. You know, the banks obviously at the forefront of any type of economic distress. So the fact that they came out with really, really good numbers in the type of environment we had, if you take into account the riots last year, you know, the benefits, the issues of COVID still kind of filtering through. The fact that they came out and their debt levels and their bad debt levels are actually as, I want to say, as positive as, you know, as they are, really, really did surprise me. You know, the rest, I think, were pretty much in line. There were no huge shocks and disappointments. You know, normally when there are disappointments, it's not because the company has, you know, been dishonest or led analysts to believe anything. It's because analysts and market usually said, well, the company said this, but we think it's going to be a hell of a lot higher. and that's been a disappointment. I don't think there's any company that I can think of which promised this and under-delivered.
Okay. I hear you on that point. I hear you on that point, Caroline. Dale, on your side, have you had any shocks or any surprises on the upside or the downside when it comes to any of these company results? And I guess maybe looking at sectors, or Caroline's already mentioned the banks that came out with stellar earnings.
Yeah, I think a lot of the companies probably gave us guidance ahead of their results coming out. So it's sometimes difficult to actually judge whether the results were a surprise, because one quickly forgets what the guidance implied a month or two earlier.
Yeah.
What stood out for me probably was, if we look at the PGM sector, yes, I think most of the earnings were lower. They're still very good earnings. If you looked at their earnings through the cycle, possibly second or third best year they've had on record, probably. But it did show deteriorations, and those deteriorations reflected in production numbers probably being a bit softer. Some of that ascribed to things like social unrest. Some of it ascribed to Eskom. And I think that's a theme that probably filters through in many sectors and markets. But there were a number of stocks that produced really solid results. And, you know, companies like Motus and Cup, et cetera, strong results.
Yeah. You know, Dale, just sticking with you, you spoke about the commodities companies, specifically mentioning PGMs, and they did come out with these lower results as expected, in line with expectations. But then you had the market reaction going deeply into the red. You had some going down 8% on the day. And I'm wondering if that was purely just market reaction, or if it's also linked to the actual commodity prices going down on that day, Dale.
I think it's a combination of two things. I think, unfortunately, they've put out results in a week where it's been a risk-off trade, concerns of global recession, etc., definitely weighing on these stocks. But I think these stocks have also, in putting out their forward guidance, haven't been particularly bullish on necessarily production volumes. And again, if we looked at where the costs were printing, I think there was probably concern that the costs were going to be a headwind into the future. And maybe that's also what weighed on the market in a down week, if I can put it that way.
What stood out for me, Caroline, was that a lot of companies on the JSC are still declaring dividends, even though you saw earnings really slumping by big proportions. I'm wondering what is the underlining sentiment to that?
Look, I think, first of all, a lot of the companies in the JSC are really quality companies, you know, even if you mark them against their international peers. So, if you're still listed at the JSC top 40, you know, you've got good management, especially, in South Africa. And a lot of these companies are the companies we'd recommend, or companies that have got very, very consistent cash flow, you know, and they've got sustainable cash flow. And, you know, they like to give a dividend. They are, their investors are largely our pension funds, things who expect a dividend. And also you find that our companies can actually curtail costs to a great extent as well. So, it does surprise me. I think that once you've got a company with a good dividend payer, they're going to do whatever they have to do to make sure that they, you know, continue to be a good dividend payer. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And I don't think that's going to change much.
Talking about listings, a company that might be delisting soon is Massmart. So they came out with that announcement that Walmart is offering a buyout for the shares that it does not already own. So there's a question here from a viewer. Now that the noise has died down, does the panel think that the Walmart bid to buy out the rest of Massmart will pass at the current offer price? So Walmart is offering 62 Rand a share. That was a 53% premium from the share price before the offer. And I think now Massmart is at about 60 Rand. Dale, what's your thoughts? Do you think that it will pass, or do you maybe think that shareholders could come out at some point and say, we want a sweetened offer?
I think if you're a long-standing shareholder, you might have hoped for more, because it's certainly been a stock that's well off its highs.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, I think people are acknowledging that the environment in which it's having to operate, with the probable entry of Amazon into South Africa next year, their whole space is remaining very competitive. Clearly, Takealot's been a competitive force in their space as well. And I think it might be a bit of a relief that you are realizing value. And you know, there's still a lot of turnaround, and maybe Walmart will feel they can do it in an unlisted vehicle easier than they can do it with Massmart being listed. So I suspect it will go through.
Yeah. You know, Caroline, Massmart, it's really a stock that's been beaten down. And I'm just wondering if this was the only option for them, or the best option for them to move forward.
No, look, I don't think it was the only option. I mean, I remember all the happiness when Walmart actually took a stake in Massmart, and we all had high hopes, and it just, I don't honestly know what went wrong. You know, it just seemed to kind of go from one failure to the other, and I think if you're a long-standing shareholder, like Dale said, you're a long-suffering shareholder, because it just really never seemed to reach the heights it could. So when you've got a business like that, and it is listed, and you know it is a no-name brand, you know, people, you know, shop there, you know, weekly, a lot of people, it's very difficult to turn a company around in a listed environment, you know, where you've got a consult of shareholders, where, you know, you've got one team of shareholders saying this, one team of shareholders saying the other. So you actually are seeing quite a few delistings, you know, overseas as well, where you actually have companies leaving the board.
Yeah.
You know, so it just becomes more flexible for them. I mean, MediClinic is another example. You know, it's been taken private, so specifically the people who run it can actually rejig that business. And, you know, I would like to see something like this be able to stay on the board, to be traded while there is a turnaround. But I think we've got to face the fact it's been about 5 years of them trying to turn the business around, and they haven't done it. You know, so, you know, this is the last chance for them to actually do it, rather do it out of mind, out of sight, and fix the business.
Yeah, with not as much scrutiny. Dale, just lastly on Massmart, I mean, we've had retailers coming in with record results, one of them being Truett's yesterday. But just looking at this company, I mean, it had a loss, an interim loss of over 1 billion rand in a time when retailers are coming out with excellent results. What can you pinpoint that was the thing that went wrong with Massmart?
I think, unfortunately, it's the mix of products that I think they've sold. Unfortunately, I think their competitive dynamic or space has gotten a lot tougher. And I think they've almost straddled trying to decide what universe they sit in. You know, things like game. What are they actually targeting? within the, you know, at one stage they were debating, you know, bringing in fresh, etc. That wasn't working out. It didn't seem to gain traction. Then they pulled out of that. And I think it's this not necessarily, you know, having a very strong defined strategy and a competitive world where, you know, if somebody's buying a fridge or buying a TV, the first thing you're going to do is go online and very quickly price compare a big ticket item, where you might not be doing it on everyday items that, or clothing is very difficult to compare. That's more of an emotional purchase decision often than it is necessarily being able to clearly compare the price of one, the same product between two different retailers. And I think it's a combination of all those factors.
All right. An emotion that True Words evoked with me yesterday, I was quite fascinated by the trajectory of the company. Caroline, are you as equally fascinated by Woolworths and clearly the market? Because we have seen the positive market reaction today.
You're talking about Woolworths?
True Words. I saw you nodding your head and I was wondering, yeah, True Words.
This has always fascinated me because, you know, I'm not a fashion connoisseur or fashion, you know, I tend to go for the sales stuff. And, you know, it's always worried me for the reason that we've had a lot of international competitors coming in, H&M and Zara.
Yeah.
And yet, and True Words managed to stay there in the forefront. You know, when we've got economic downturns and you'd expect people to really be down trading into something cheaper, they're still at True Words. Mm-hmm. So they're doing something right. You know, the fashion mix is right. The management is good. You know, so every time I expect it's going to falter, it just doesn't. And I think like Dale said about Massmart, when you get your product mix right and you get your situation where you are right, you know, you're in the sweet spot and you're going to keep on performing. And yeah, very, very good business.
Yeah, all right. We'll also go into Woolworths. But Dale, I just want to get your thoughts on True Words. I mean, Caroline says that, you know, it's a counter that she expects it to falter, but then it really doesn't. And in fact, it continues to surprise to the upside. So just looking at True Words, do you think that it is a worthy competitor to favorites such as Mr. Price and TFG?
Well, I mean, I think Mr. Price is probably targeting most of the time a different consumer, you know, where I think their competitor is TFG. Mm. Clearly, they have done well. And I tend to agree. We all are expecting the consumer to be under some pressure. Yes, I think they've certainly have the ability to open the taps from a credit point of view. But, you know, what positively surprised the market from that point of view is that their bad debt experiences are remaining very positive.
Yeah.
So, and I think though that's probably where they're executing well. And if they can continue to do that and navigate, I think, a consumer that might be under some pressure, they'll possibly continue to do well.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, with, you know, you look at retail sales and you look at what consumers are cutting out, but it seems that clothing really isn't one of those things. Clothing retailers are really the winners here. As Dale mentioned earlier, that it's an emotional thing. So you even see that with the recovery of the fashion, beauty and home division of Woolworths. And just looking at Woolworths, they also came out with results this week. It seems that things are coming along. Caroline, would you say that this is a commendable self-help story from Woolworths?
Look, it's certainly an improvement of where they've been in prior years. And what is actually nice is that you are seeing the fashionable part of the business, you know, clothing actually doing better. I think a lot of that is also because people are going back to work, you know, and they're buying those work clothes, you know, that we didn't really need during lockdown. So it'll be interesting to see if that trend actually carries on. That's the first thing. The second thing that actually does worry me a bit about Woolworths is that food sector. You know, this is something that really is feeling the competition, particularly from Checkers.
Yeah.
And this is really one of those sectors where people do down trade. And, you know, if you walk into Woolworths, they are very expensive. Now, I know that management is dealing with that, you know, trying to put things a little bit less expensive. I suppose it's all relative. But, you know, that's going to eat into margins. So I'm not quite as enthused about Woolworths right now. I want to see the trajectory of the clothing division and also what is actually going to happen on the food division as our economy gets weaker.
Sticking with you, Caroline, what about David Jones? Because that's been like the one of the major concerns when it comes to Woolworths. But it seems that there really is some sort of improvement. The fact that also Woolworths was saying that they're waiting for more capital from post the reporting period from David Jones.
Okay, I'm just going to park it there. We've had so many.
Yeah.
I was like, don't even go to David Jones. You've been David Jones' locker.
You know,
I don't think they've ever been really upfront about that business. And I think it's, you know, I find it very difficult when they talk about it. You wonder if they're trying to save face.
Okay.
So I'm just going to place that there and make no further comments. And I will see what actually transpires.
Yeah. Dale, do you have any thoughts on Woolworths?
Yeah, I tend to agree that I think there is a recovery story, and I think it's still early days when it comes to their fashion, beauty, and home side. The sort of margins they're achieving, they are well off the sort of averages that we saw, you know, for an extended period of time going back 10 years or whatever. But I would share the concerns around the food side. It's a very important part of the business. I think there is a bit of a base effect that one has to give some credit for, that they were a beneficiary of COVID, and that has unwound. But I agree the comments of competition that Caroline made, I think that is coming through. And we'll have to see how they navigate it, if they can hold. So we'll have to watch that. And then I think what's also probably given the market a bit more comfort is the issue around Australia, in particular David Jones. And that, you know, they have, I think, affected a separation in terms of covenants for that business. That business did turn, you know, cash self-funding now, etc. So, you know, the risks associated with it at the moment appear to be minimal for Woolies shareholders, and that's the positive. And Country Road continues to actually execute relatively well. And and Australia is still actually, you know, the year that was reported still actually saw a period where there was negative impacts of COVID and the businesses showed improvements. I think that's worth noting.
All right. Dale, just sticking with you, there's a question here on Grindrod Shipping. Grindrod Shipping announced this week that it's in talks for a buyout offer from Taylor Maritime Investments. Can the panel please explain the breakdown of that deal price and who will that special dividend be coming from? Dale, have you had a chance to look at that breakdown?
I haven't had a chance to look at that, unfortunately, so I can't really give much detail.
Caroline, on your side?
I think the only thing I looked at, it's such a low-held share, you know, really don't have any clientele, that I just thought it was going to be delisting, and I noted it as another delisting from the JSE, fortunately.
Yeah.
So, no, I can't talk to the deal in depth.
All right. So, Dale, do you feel any sort of way about Grindrod or about the JSE potentially losing Grindrod Shipping? I mean, it's done quite well recently.
I am a little sad. I used to look at it and cover it a little bit more closely when it was combined. I think it was always a nice, interesting option when you wanted to understand global shipping and some of those, you know, trade flows, certainly on the dry bulk and the chemical side. I think it's always been actually relatively well-run shipping business. But I agree, the issue with the JSE losing, you know, listings, et cetera, is something that is cause for concern as a fund manager in South Africa, and we'd love a period of listings rather than delistings. But unfortunately, maybe in this tougher macro environment, and I think people taking advantages of the fact that stocks do look cheaper, and you know, the ability to actually take them off the market is there.
Yeah. There's a question here. Please ask the panel about Murray and Roberts. The share's down about a fifth over the last month. Is it a buy or a sell? They did come out with results this week as well, swinging from a loss to a profit, seeming like they've got a good pipeline of projects, a good order book. Caroline, would this be an opportunity, this downside that we're seeing in the share price, would this be a good opportunity to buy?
Look, I think it is an opportunity. I had a look at it again. I thought those results were actually very, very good. Considering where all of these, construction engineering companies have been and the problems they've had during the COVID period. So I think it was a great set of results. This is also a very, very good business. If you just want to look where their projects are, it's energy, mining, power, and it's diverse geographically. South Africa's only 16% of that revenue, so it's not even really a South African company anymore. And there's good potential for them, even in South Africa. If we finally get our infrastructure project off the ground, they do focus on power and water in South Africa. So yes, I think it's solid where it is now. It has recovered after COVID. It has got a very good order book. It is a well-run business. And then there is the potential of getting those extra bits if South Africa gets, like I said, that infrastructure expenditure on the road. I'm not a fan of construction companies. But
A
simply
lot of you
because
aren't.
if one project goes astray, you've lost your margin for your whole book. But, where it is now, it's an option as
All
an
right.
investment.
Okay. There's another question here. Please ask the panel if African Rainbow Capital is a good buy for the long term. Also had results out yesterday. Headline earnings did slump by double digits. Of course, suffering from the lower prices of iron ore, PGMs, coal came out as the star performer there. Dale, what do you think? Do you think that it stands them in good stead that they are diversified on that front?
Okay, well, just to clarify, that's African Rainbow
African
Minerals.
Rainbow Minerals. Did I say capital? Oh, yes, yes, minerals.
So the mineral side, I think your points are valid. I think they've got a nice diversified portfolio of minerals. And from that point of view, I think they're not expensive. But, at this point in the cycle, one has to consider the whole commodity space. They often look cheapest at the top of the cycle or at a period where you shouldn't be buying them. And that's just the caution. Things could be different this time. The one thing that is probably offering support to commodity prices is the lack of supply side investment that we've seen since the GFC. And that's in particular, we've seen that in PGMs. Hence, PGM prices are still at levels where they're making lots of money in an arm. So I think that's still valid, and one needs to just keep an eye on this. If we enter a real deep global recession, it's probably not a space you want to be in. And that's what I think has made the market quite nervous with respect to commodity names.
All right. Well, let's get into your stock picks for the evening. Caroline, what will it be for tonight?
Well, I'm going to be very brave, and I've chosen the iShares Semiconductor Exchange Traded Fund. The code is SOXX. It's down 25% for the year. I'm sure it's going to go down a little bit further with all of the issues right now with the US and China restricting sale of certain semiconductors to China. But semiconductors as an industry is a growth industry, and there's massive growth in the years going forward. You just maybe don't want to stock pick at this point. So this particular exchange traded fund, no company dominates. The highest holding is 77%, apologies. And you've got Qualcomm, Broadcom, AMD, Nvidia, all of the big guys where you want to be with spreading the risk.
All right, quite an interesting one. Dell, where are you hanging your hat on today?
Yeah, also a bit of a speculative one I'd have a look at is Telkom, just in the context of corporate action. MTN certainly, looking at it, I think OpenServe is an attractive investment for MTN. And, they've still got corporate action around potentially their gyro business or their tower business that I think will unlock some value. So there's a few corporate actions that I think could unlock value for shareholders. I'm not sure you want to be there for the long term post these sort of things playing themselves out, but certainly those transactions would make it attractive at these levels.
Yeah, another counter that the JSE could lose as well. to MTN. But yeah, thank you very much for your time and for your insights today, Caroline and Dale. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guest, Dale Hutchison from APSA Asset Management and Caroline Kremen from AdviceWorks. From Zinati Kuma and the rest of the team, have a great weekend. Yes.